The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
If you are looking for life and career enhancements, you need experts that have been there, done that, tried, sometimes failed, and ultimately succeeded. Welcome to The Business of Living with Scott Ventrella. You may be looking for help with relationships, health and wellness, home life, career, finance, or faith. We hopefully have the answers you are seeking. Now, here is your host, Scott Ventrella.
Welcome to the show. So let me ask you, how's your day going so far? Are you feeling nice and relaxed and in control? You know, everything's going your way, falling into place. Well, if so, what the heck is wrong with you, right? I just don't think that that's a common experience for many people. I don't know about you, but I think that, and this is anecdotal, I'm sure somebody's got done a study somewhere on this, and certainly I think if we just, you know, take a drive through the town or city that you live in, and you'll see a lot of frazzled people out there. You're running around, you know, shuffling kids around, you know, getting to the job, grocery store, doctor's appointments. It's, I don't know, it just seems like sometimes we need to stop and pause and, like this great, there's a great song, you know, need to breathe, just breathe. I was talking to a friend yesterday who is, you know, a mother, wife, mother of 3 children, and also an entrepreneur. Has started a great little business, has employees, and just, you know, we were just kind of talking. Said, you know, it's everything's just such a swirl between taking care of my family, running my business. I just don't have time for myself. You know, time to think, reflect, and be in the moment. And she said, you know, I want it all. And actually, I chuckled. I said, well, I'm not sure if you can have it all. And then we hear terms being thrown around like the work-life balance. And I don't mean to make fun of that. I've used that term before. It does get tossed around an awful lot. And I think that we toss it around because it is shorthand. People kind of get what it means and the intention behind the phrase. Although, personally, I think it's more than just striking a balance. In other words, work-life balance in some ways to me suggests that, okay, I've got to find a better, let's say, balance between the number of hours I'm putting in at the job and the number of hours and the amount of time that I'm spending with my family. And obviously, at one point, before a lot of this technology, it was, I think, a lot easier to do. Now, obviously, with the between the internet and our smartphones, we are just constantly plugged in 24/7, and work seems to be, you know, it has just completely infiltrated our personal lives. So I do think that it's bigger than just a work-life balance. And my hope today is really to dive into this matter and share ideas on how to reduce stress, anxiety, and burnout, and perhaps get a new perspective on how to look at these things. And not too long ago, I came across an article which was titled, it was in the Forbes magazine, and it was titled, How to Avoid Being Overwhelmed and Exhausted. And I thought, oh man, you know, sign me up. And I know a million other people that would like to be signed up. And I said, this is too good to be true. This must be some, you know, pie in the sky, you know, unrealistic, overly positive, optimistic kind of a person. Because can you really do that? As I read through the article, I thought, wow, you know, this person's, you know, got something to say. There's some good stuff here. And I'm pleased to have Vanessa, the author of that great article, Vanessa Loader, on the show. Vanessa is an entrepreneur, executive coach, and a public speaker whose company, Akoya Power, supports women in creating fulfilling lives aligned with their passions and values. She's also the co-founder of Mindfulness-Based Achievement. It also goes by the term of MBA. And it's a curriculum that teaches high-potential leaders how to shift from overwhelm to ease. I want to know more about that, too. Vanessa's received her MBA from Stanford University and her BA in economics from Columbia University. And I hate to sound like a snob, but I think that's what really caught my attention. You could have some great articles on this subject, and by well-meaning, very smart, intelligent people. But I think there's always a little bit of skeptic and cynic in maybe all of us. Maybe I'm overgeneralizing. But when I saw her background, I thought, well, this is interesting. You know, we've got somebody here that I think with that those kinds of credentials, I think it just brings a little bit more credibility. Because I would imagine at least the people that I've come across in my work and in personal life, generally people with, an economics, a financial background tend to be a little bit more skeptical, tend to be maybe a little bit more cynical. In some ways, I think the job kind of, warrants that. But, and I'm not suggesting that Vanessa is a skeptic or a cynic. Again, she's written some fantastic material. And here joining us now is Vanessa. Vanessa, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So listen, now, I really chatted up. And I get it. Academic credentials aren't everything, but as I understand it, you have at one time, you did kind of the Wall Street thing or financial services, and then you kind of, just gave that all up and have pursued, let's say, a different track. What's that all about?
Yeah. Well, I have been very overwhelmed and exhausted myself for a lot of my life, which is why I'm so interested in these tools. So I spent almost 10 years in finance doing first investment banking on Wall Street at Morgan Stanley, and then I worked in private equity doing billion-dollar buyouts, and then later at a mid-market fund in San Francisco. Got my MBA from Stanford, and I basically climbed my way up the corporate ladder and got to this point in my career where I was very successful on the board of a company, on track to be a partner at my firm, and everything on paper looked great, and yet I was stressed out and anxious and exhausted. And, especially when I worked on Wall Street, I would work around the clock and come home from work so drained and exhausted that I would just zone out in front of the television or drink a little too much wine, because those were my only coping mechanisms for dealing with the stress. And so basically, go ahead.
No, at the time, just on the personal side, were you married, any children, or just living the single life at the time?
Yeah, well, so when I was working the 100-hour weeks, I was single at the time.
Right. Okay. Well, unless you meet a night watchman or an airline pilot, I don't know how you'd ever possibly be able to have any kind of a reasonable relationship at 100 hours a week.
Yeah, no, I still remember I was dating this one guy, and I pulled my first all-nighter in Morgan Stanley, and I had to cancel on Valentine's Day, and he had dinner plans and tickets to a show. I remember so vividly because I was wearing a red sweater, and the next day the partner came in, the managing director, and said, "Oh, you pulled an all-nighter, way to go," and like high-fived me because he saw I was wearing the same, Valentine's Day red sweater. And I remember high-fiving him and thinking, gee, I guess I did well, but this seems really wrong.
Right. you were earning your stripes, right? I mean, to make partner in any kind of firm like that, and I live an hour out of New York City. I do a lot of work down there. I've got a lot of Wall Street-type clients. I won't mention the companies, but it's exactly how you described it. Male or female, it is, it is just incredibly intense. People are stressed out, and they'll make, let's face it, they will make piles of money. I think this December there'll be some pretty good bonuses that are paid out. And that certainly, I think a lot of people that are in that industry, they say, okay, well, it's justified because, I can provide a better lifestyle for my family if that applies, or just, kind of tuck something away for when I'm a little bit older and maybe for my retirement. So I certainly understand the mindset, and it sounds like you were all in.
Yeah, I was. And then a couple things happened. The first thing that happened was my mom got cancer. And I don't know if you've ever had, a family member get sick, but it really starts to put things in perspective. And I ended up deferring business school to help her through her chemo. And then when that was finished, she said, "Why don't you go do something for you?" And so I actually bought an around-the-world plane ticket and traveled all over and ended up raising money and building a school in Ghana in West Africa. And that was one of the first times in my life where I just followed my heart and I did something that was really meaningful to me. And that was sort of a glimpse at what life could be like. But then I went to Stanford to get my MBA, and I kind of fell back into the rat race, actually. And I graduated from Stanford, thought about doing something entrepreneurial, but basically chickened out and went back to finance.
Why did you chicken out, Vanessa?
So at the time, I had a wonderfully rational excuse, which was that I had student loans and I should just take a job to pay off my loans. And I told all my friends I wouldn't last more than a year, and I stayed 3. In hindsight, I think what was really going on was fear. I was afraid of failing. I was afraid of taking a risk. And I also was afraid because I didn't know what I wanted to do. And so that felt really scary, to not have a plan and to not know what I wanted.
Those are all the ingredients, I would say, for, again, kind of becoming immobilized, becoming kind of frozen. And I think also, the idea of, not having a plan, I think minimally if you had, some direction, some idea of what it was that you were looking for. So, okay, so I get that. And then you did the Stanford thing, and that's a pretty light investment, right?
Yeah.
So now you're racking up some you're racking up some expenses and loans and things like that. But you're plowing through. Okay, take us through some more.
So then I decided, well, at least I'm going to choose to go to a firm that where I really like the people and there's better work, better work-life balance. And so I did choose that, and I went to a middle market firm and really good people. And then worked there for several years and got to this point where I was on track to be a partner. And I remember thinking, like, this is it. I've achieved all of these things I wanted in life. And it's sort of like I climbed to the top of the ladder and looked around and went, crap, wrong ladder.
Wrong ladder. That's right. You're at the top of the rung and the wrong ladder. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I really started to question, because I felt like I'd followed a formula for success in life, which was get good grades, go to a good school, get a good job, get a good promotion, go to a good grad school, get another good job. And I assumed all of these things would equate to happiness. And I got to the end of it and I wasn't happy and I wasn't fulfilled. And I just felt like there had to be more out there for me. And on top of that, I was very anxious and stressed out a lot of the time and didn't know how to cope with that. And I wanted tools for handling anxiety and stress and overwhelm. And so I started learning about mindfulness and other alternative healing modalities. And I ended up getting so curious. I trained in something called neuro-linguistic programming, which is a way to reprogram your neurology to change your response to stress. And I went on 5-day and 10-day silent meditation retreats. And I ended up changing so dramatically that I realized what I was most passionate about was bringing those tools to other people, especially people in the business world who were really overwhelmed and exhausted. And so I actually quit my job and have spent the last several years teaching people how to go from overwhelm to ease. And I create my business partner, Lisa Abramson, and I co-founded Mindfulness-Based Achievement, the new MBA, to teach people these tools. And we wanted to make it really approachable for people who are busy and might not have a lot of time to invest in the beginning.
Yeah, I would say that people that that come to me for advice on that, they say, look, I know I have to take better care of my health. I know I need to be present and available to loved ones, family, friends, etc. I don't have the time. I can't find the time. I can't make the time. If I get up earlier, then I'm going to be tired and I'll be cranky. And the, the job, certainly that has to be a priority because there's certain expectations there. So it seems to be kind of a little bit of a vicious cycle. I want to get a little bit into the work-life balance, but before we do that, mindfulness, you use that term, I think intuitively we might know what it means, but what is that? What is mindfulness?
Yeah, I think people define it slightly differently, but for us in our curriculum, it's really just about awareness. It's about pausing, taking a breath, and noticing what's going on in the moment.
Okay, so how do we do that?
That's a great question. Well, so one of the things we found supporting thousands of people is that in the beginning, it's really hard to just sit still and meditate if you've never done it before. So a couple of things. Number one, people are less likely to carve out 20 minutes at a time to meditate. And number two, they don't like sitting in silence in the beginning if they've never done it before.
I mean, so Vanessa, look, I'm sorry, but, you know, eating a meal, we'll give ourselves, what, about, you know, maybe 3 minutes for breakfast? And, you know, maybe 10 minutes for dinner. But, well, I mean, come on, 20 minutes for meditation?
Right. It seems like a lot. So one thing that we've done to help make it easier for people, we do a free 30-day meditation challenge where you get a 5-minute guided meditation every morning for 30 days. And so it's something you can do first thing in the morning. You know, we found so many people look at their phone right when they wake up, and then they check emails and get really stressed out about everything they need to do for the day.
Yeah,
but if you instead replace that with a habit of just taking 5 minutes to be quiet and listen to a guided meditation, it changes the whole tone of your day.
So guided meditation, is that, it almost, I always thought of, I don't know, my mind is so active. I've tried the, not formal meditation, but it just seems like all these thoughts run through. I can't get my head quiet. But a guided meditation, I always thought of meditation as something you just kind of do on your own. You're saying that you and your organization helps guide people through this process.
Exactly. And so every day you get a different guided meditation, and some of them will be on, focusing on your breath, but some other ones might be on how to speak with greater confidence or forgiveness, loving kindness. We have all different types of meditations. But what we found is when you're first starting to meditate, it can be really great to listen to a voice, because then your mind has something to focus on. And so even if you can't quiet it as easily as you'd like, you can sort of have a point of focus, which when you're listening to someone's voice, it can be easier in the beginning.
Well, I think I'm going to actually have to give that a try, and if it works, I'll be your biggest advocate. Believe me. just about time for a break, and when we come back, Vanessa, I'd like to get your thoughts on. I think you heard my comments at the beginning of the show, the work-life balance, and again, you've written some great material on this. Is it even possible? So, would love to get your thoughts on that right after we come back from this break. Don't go away.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Have you had a chance to check out Voice America's online magazine and blog, Press Pass? If you love our hosts and shows, check out articles that give an even deeper perspective. Plus topics about health and fitness, movie reviews, philosophy, business tips and tactics, spirituality, positive thought, current events, and even more about your favorite host. It's just a click away at VAPressPass.com. That's VAPressPass.com. VA Press Pass by Voice America. All access, all the time.
For 27 years, KidStar has empowered thousands of kids across the country.
And now we have the opportunity to empower children around the world.
KidStar is announcing a new radio show called Voyage Earth.
Voyage Earth will empower kids from across the world.
KidStar has created a Kickstarter campaign just for this new undertaking. By pledging to Kickstarter, you pledge for a future of empowered people to come.
My name is Rinsley from Indy on Voice America Kids. I want to thank you for being a backer of our Kickstarter, Voyager.
Kickstarter, we empower kids.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
Follow the Voice America Talk Radio Network on Twitter. We're at Voice America TRN. You'll get the latest fix on what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and general happenings that you should know about at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Now you don't have to miss anything when you're away from your home or office. Just go to twitter.com/Voice America TRN or follow along with us at Voice America TRN, the Voice America Talk Radio Network. We're on the cutting edge of social media. Can you keep up?
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is The Business of Living with Scott Ventrella. To reach the show today, call in to 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to scott@thebusinessofliving.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. We are here speaking with Vanessa Loader. And as I mentioned, what got my attention was this great article Vanessa did in published in Forbes magazine. I think it might have been Forbes Online, Vanessa. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it was how to avoid being overwhelmed and exhausted. I mean, if you can bottle that up, I mean, let me tell you, you've got a gold mine right there. So again, thanks for being on the show. When we left off, we were talking a little bit about work-life balance. I don't know. I think we all understand what the term means, but I think that there's much more to it than just a simple phrase. Please share your thoughts. How, you know, what is it? How do you achieve it?
Yeah, well, I think the first step to work-life balance is really defining success for yourself on your terms. So getting really clear on what does success mean to you. And, you know, this comes back to the mindfulness part where you have awareness or mindfulness about the pressures that are out there to define success on a single metric, which is usually money, which is equated with power. But there's a whole other host of things that go into what makes a successful life. You know, how much time do you spend with your loved ones? How fulfilled are you? Are you creative? Do you have hobbies? So really defining success for yourself and taking a step back to figure out what success means to you, and then having the courage to stay true to your values amidst, you know, everyone else doing whatever they're doing around you.
So was that your, when you described the, hey, I climbed the ladder, got to the top, and I realized, oh my gosh, I'm on, you know, it's the wrong ladder. Was that kind of a defining moment for you? Was that when you had begun to, you know, define what success was for yourself? Because it sounds like there was maybe not a significant transformation. We're not talking about a Saul of Damascus, right, falling off the horse. But it does sound like that you know, there was some kind of a defining moment that caused you to take a step back and say, this is all wrong, and I've really got to make a fundamental shift. Was that your version of defining success for yourself, or the catalyst?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think for me, actually, what happened first in that situation was I started by defining what success was not for me. So I started to realize this is not what success is for me. But then what is success for me? And I really didn't know. And that was the scary unknown place. And actually, as you asked that question, a poignant memory came to me. So that I think illustrates this so interestingly. When I first quit my job, I decided, all right, I'm going to give myself 6 months to follow my heart and my intuition to find work that I love. I don't even know how to do that. I don't even know what that means. But I know that if I follow my mind and my ego and my wallet as I have been, I'm going to be unfulfilled. So my goal is to follow my heart and my intuition and give myself 6 months. And what happened in that first month was my husband had a business trip to Florida. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to tag along because I can never do this. This will be so fun. And my husband happens to work at a mutual fund because we met in business school, but he's in finance. And so I went to this hotel, decided, oh, I'm just going to go to yoga and lay out by the pool and read good books about how to find a career that you love. And the first day, I'm in the elevator in a bikini with a cover-up and a hat. And the door, I get in, the elevator goes down 2 floors, the doors open, and in walk all of these men in suits from my husband's conference with, you know, little tags that say, like, Credit Suisse and all the different banks. And one of the men kind of looked me up and down. And I had this moment where I wanted to say, I got really angry and I wanted to say, you know, I'm not some farm candy, trophy wife, just tagging right. along with my husband. Like, I used to do your job. I probably did it better than you. Blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, I got out of that elevator and I thought, oh my gosh, my ego was really attached to that identity that I had of being someone important in finance. And that for me was a real defining moment of how attached I had become to this persona and to thinking that that's what I needed for people to respect me.
It
was more like an unwinding and a letting go that happened for me in that process.
Well, I think, you know, when you're so caught up in that world and everybody, you know, listening in, you know, we all have our different versions of that, but we do get kind of get, look, you get caught up in the certain trappings of a job and the status, the, you know, the prestige. And I would even imagine that, you know, when you started to make that shift, some people probably thought you were a little crazy. I mean, come on, hey, what do you realize what you're walking away from? But it sounds like also, not that you weren't aware of your values, the core values, but it sounds like you did a little bit of a reset on your values.
Yeah, no, I don't think I was aware of all of my core values. On a deeper level, I was aware of them, but I wasn't honoring them, and I wasn't making choices that were aligned with them, and that was the discrepancy that was causing me to feel so unfulfilled and confused. And the other interesting thing is I had all of these fears, like, okay, now I'm going to be some, like, career coach. I bet all my Stanford classmates are going to think I'm just a woo-woo person, and they're not going to respect me. And then what I found is I've shared articles and newsletters and different things. I've had so many people come out of the woodwork and share the most vulnerable things with me and say, oh my gosh, Vanessa, I feel the same way and I'm trapped in this career and your story has really helped me. And I haven't had a single person who said, I can't believe you're doing this. You're such an idiot. I mean, maybe those people are thinking that, but they haven't bothered to share it with me.
Yeah, right. And you know, who needs those people anyway, right? So what would be an example of a value that you were aware of but you weren't honoring?
For me, a really big one that I've started to step into now is creativity.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. So do you think that your creativity was stifled?
Definitely. I didn't consider myself a creative person. I had a story that, you know, my sister's an artist and a professional photographer, and I thought, well, I've always been good at math and numbers, and she's the creative one, and I'm not creative. And what I've learned is I'm incredibly creative. I'm taking a pottery class right now. I've done, like, watercolor, different types of art projects, and it's something that now I really enjoy, but I didn't honor it as something that I valued.
So I think it is important to be clear on, again, key values. There's a lot of things that we value, you know, family and friends and health and even, you know, work, money, whatever it might be. But I think being clear on, you know, what I think some of the, it can't be a list, I would imagine, of 20 things in terms of those things. You used a really good word, Vanessa. You said I wasn't honoring, you know, certain values. I don't think you're talking about 50 different values. You mentioned creativity as an example. What is a way that people can kind of, you know, reconnect with what some of those core values are? You know, what would be a method in your own mind?
Yeah, I actually have a values assessment tool that it's really easy to do. It literally just takes 5 or 10 minutes, where you have a list of these different values, and there's a process for narrowing down what your top values are and getting clear on your top values. And so there's a values exercise that people can do to get clarity on their values.
So how would that, give me an example of how that might work. Is it, is it case studies that you're reading and, you know, moral of the story kind of a thing? How exactly does that work?
Yeah, it's much more simple than that. It's actually a piece of paper with basically all these values on it, and you go through and circle the ones that resonate the most with you, and then there's a process by which you get into a calm, clear space, and then you go back through and you eliminate and you narrow it down until you get to your top values.
Okay. Oh, I like that. Yeah. And then so once you find that top value, then what?
So then you have a list of 10, and so you narrow it down to your top 10 values. And then what you do is what I like to recommend people do is they paste that somewhere, you know, stick it somewhere where they'll see it often, so at your desk or having it around your home. And so it's just a reminder when choices come up that you come back to your values. I'll even have some clients, like, look at their values every morning before they start their day, and they'll say an affirmation, like, today I'm going to make choices aligned with my values of, and then they'll look at their values so that in that moment when someone asks you to do something that deep down you don't want to do, it's easier to say no.
I like that. And let's continue with the work-life balance from your great piece on, you know, work-life balance. Is it even possible? Let's talk some more about that. What are some other ways that we can kind of manage around that whole issue of work-life balance?
Yeah, so another one is around, you know, you mentioned in the beginning of this call around technology and how prevalent it is right these days. And, you know, we're constantly being bombarded and distracted with our computer screens and our cell phone, and we have access to everything. And so in order to create work-life balance, it's really important to have healthy boundaries around technology and to use it for you rather than to have it using you. Mm-hmm. You know, so one thing that I've actually started doing that I really like is kind of a technology sabbatical, or, well, sabbath, I guess you'd call it, is from Friday night, from Friday sundown until Sunday morning sun up, it's no technology. Now, I have amended that to work for me. So I use my phone. If I'm trying to meet up with someone, obviously, I'm still going to call them, but I don't then check my email. So, I'm not using my phone for email or text messaging unless it's to coordinate a social, you know, interaction. From Friday sundown until Sunday sunup, I just unplug from technology.
I really hope people are hearing this, because I think there's maybe a psychological addiction, and there is such a thing. And unless I believe it's so difficult for people to be able to do that. It was a while ago that I made the same decision that from Saturday night until Monday morning, I'm not checking email. I'd leave my phone on because family would have that number, but no, I would not get into the email. I was pretty good at setting boundaries at night about, you know, because, you know, if you check your email before you're going to bed and it's something that distressing, like you said, or even in the morning, if it's right, I never keep my phone on the nightstand. It's always downstairs. We're on a, you know, two-level house, and so I keep it downstairs to make it less convenient. So I think that that's another tip. But I think it's really difficult, Vanessa, what you're saying, because that urge, I see people in the, you know, on the sports fields, people, I see people at church or at, various events that they are simply tethered to that thing. And it's as simple as an on-off switch. But I'd also mention, and I'm not sure, I'd love your thought on this, but I think one of the mistakes that many people make is that, you know, we don't tell people what we're doing. So we've set expectations where we're, you know, we're 24/7 on demand, and then we make these changes, and then they want to know the boss or whomever, a client, you know, well, where the heck were you? I've been trying to get a hold of you. Oh, gee, I forgot to tell you that I kind of go, you know, off the grid during these hours or these times, these days. So I think also to be able to communicate that. I mean, you have an impressive client roster. I'll let you mention. I don't know if I don't want to break any rules by mentioning your clients, but an impressive, and I would imagine, you know, they have expectations in terms of your being available and accessible. So what did you do to kind of prepare people that, hey, I'm going off the grid. I hope you can respect and appreciate that.
Yeah, I think it's really important that you bring up a good point to communicate clearly and set those expectations up front. So I just tell people I'm not available on the weekends at all, actually. So I don't respond.
And you don't get pushback. You don't get pushback. It's like, oh, really? Well, who are you? Wouldn't I like to have a life like that?
I know. Yeah, no, I don't get pushback. And it's amazing. I think people, you know, what I've learned is we have much more leeway than we ever assume we do. You know, when we taught this program to one woman at Google, she was shocked that she flew up to Oregon for meetings one day and with all these senior executives, and she wanted to get out by 1 p.m. to make an earlier flight because she had a personal commitment that evening. And as part of the tool she learned in our MBA program, she decided to just tell them, like, okay, I need to leave by this time. Here's what I'm willing to do to make that happen. And she said they all moved mountains so she could get out the door on time, and it was no big deal. And she was shocked that everyone just responded and said, okay, sure, we'll get it done. And she said, you know, 12 hours worth of meetings happened in 5 hours, and it just happened. All she had to do was set the boundary and make the request, and they made it happen. So I think sometimes we think we need to work the 11th hour, burn the midnight oil, you know, stay late to get that gold star. And we're actually, you know, making it harder than it needs to be.
Yeah. And you know, some people may be tired of this word, but, you know, I think it sub-optimizes. I really don't think we're at our best when we're so scattered and we're trying to do so much in so little time. I don't think we're at our best when we're scattered and unfocused like that. You have another really interesting tip here, or I should say a profound tip here, where you talk about collaborating with your partner. Talk a little bit about that.
Collaborating with your partner. So it's important to have, you know, a shared vision for success. So I think with both with your partner at home and with if you have a partner at work, you want to make sure that everyone is getting their needs met and that you're clear on expectations. But collaborating with your partner, what that really means is talking to your spouse or your life partner and making sure that you're getting the emotional support that you both need from each other, because that's really important to cultivate work-life balance.
So you make an interesting point here also. Marry someone who shares your career vision and have those conversations before you walk down the aisle. Wow. So are you saying or suggesting that, you know, if they don't share your, let's say you're really, you know, digging each other and but they don't share your career vision. So do you don't walk down the, you avoid walking down the aisle?
Well, I think that's a tricky situation, you know.
Get them to change their point of view, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I'm not going to give marital advice unless I have more information.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, you're good. Yeah.
You know, I will say that it is helpful to address those things up front. And at the same time, you know, I've found it interesting that even if you have those conversations, you might still be surprised what happens. So, for example, my husband and I met in business school. I was a very career-oriented woman. He's a career-oriented man. And we have a daughter now. And when she was first born, I think we both had a strange belief that maybe, not strange, but strange belief that I might want to be with my daughter full time. And I quickly discovered I love my business and I wouldn't want to give that up. And my husband shared that on some level, he kind of had an expectation that I would stay home with our daughter simply because that was his experience with his parents. And sometimes we aren't even aware of the default model that's in our mind just because of whatever, you know, however our circumstances were growing up. And so just bringing all of that to the forefront and having a more open and honest conversation can be really helpful and productive.
Exactly. No, that's fantastic. Hey, listen, time to go to a break. When we come back, Vanessa is going to help us all by sharing her 5 ways to lean in without burning out. We'll be right back.
News. Opinion. Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
Take us on the go. It's even easier now. The Voice America Talk Radio Network has launched our mobile app for iPhone, Android, or BlackBerry. Visit the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market to download the app powered by Aircast. It's free and no registration is necessary. In minutes, you could be enjoying your favorite Voice America Talk Radio host, no matter where you are, in the car, out and about, while traveling, or anytime you can't be close to your computer. Catch up on the archives you've missed or discover new shows on the spot. Search Voice America at your favorite app store.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
The latest business information is made simple with the Voice America Business Network. The professionals in the business world bring you live talk radio shows featuring an array of business topics, strategies for building wealth, sales and marketing, stock trading, investing, and business technology. Voice America Business hosts are professionals in their fields and bring to the airwaves weekly business discussions that offer up-to-date information, advice, and education. The Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business talk.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is The Business of Living with Scott Ventrella. To reach the show today, call in to 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to scott@thebusinessofliving.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. We are here speaking with Vanessa Loader, and as promised, Vanessa is going to share her five ways to lean in without burning out. Vanessa, I run across so many people that they just can't manage it all. It's like plate spinning. You know, they've got 500, I could exaggerate and say 5,000. Some do have 5,000 emails. The phone's ringing. They've got meetings, and they've got family responsibilities. Look, you mentioned your husband's got a big job. You have a business that you're running with a partner. You have incredibly, given your clients, including, you know, Google, LinkedIn, StubHub, YouTube, et cetera. You know, these are, you know, you've got to be on top of your game. You've got to be responsive. This is, I would imagine there's a fair amount of stress. And, oh, by the way, you mentioned you have a daughter. How old is your daughter?
She's 26 months, so a little over two.
Okay, that's easy because a 26-month, you know, they kind of can take care of themselves. You know, you just put them on autopilot, flunk them in front of a TV or a computer or, you know, an iPad, right? Right? There's no stress associated with that.
So
you're leaning in and you're not burning out. Come on, you got to level with me.
No, I'm really not. I'm genuinely not burning out. It is amazing to say, but it's true.
So what are some ways to lean in without burning out?
Yeah, so there's five keys I'd love to discuss. So the first one is to be authentic. And that comes back to what we already talked about a little bit, is getting clear with your values and making choices that align with your values. So for example, because my business now, I'm so passionate about what I do, inspiring and empowering women and men, but mostly women, that, you know, my work feels like play. So that right there takes away a lot of the difficulty with work-life balance because my work and my life are much more the same thing.
Speaking as a man, Vanessa, men, you know, we think we're empowered anyway. It may not be fact, but you know, we think we're already empowered. So you're probably putting your focus where it should be.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate your approval.
We need a lot of help. Okay. So I think about expanding, you know, into that other category.
I will. Well, look, the good news is that all the tools I'm sharing today are great for men and women.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So the second piece is to really get clear on your vision. And this is something that, I found has blown me away with how effective it is and how unaware I was of this tool, even though I consider myself a highly educated, you know, successful person in the corporate world. So visualization is something that, you know, all Olympic athletes use. If you see them now, like the entire bobsled team is up there leaning before the race, pretending like they're in the chorus, you know, doing it in their mind's eye. And yet corporate athletes are completely underutilizing this tool. So, you know, starting to practice visualization and visioning is really an important part of leaning in without burning out.
Okay, hold on. Now, what's a corporate athlete? I'll ask.
Corporate athlete is someone who, you know, it has a big career.
Okay, so you're saying that, and I do like the connection between, because we all know, you know, an athlete at the top of their game. You know, pick your favorite sport, pick your favorite athlete. That has a certain connotation. So, okay, corporate athlete, they're either striving for or at the top of their game. Got it. Okay. And so you're saying that I think we're all familiar with the idea of the idea of athletes, you know, visualizing. I remember the first marathon, the New York City Marathon that I ran. I was a big advocate of visualization. And I remember running the entire race and experiencing everything, you know, using all of the senses and seeing myself all the way through. I actually visualized incorrectly. You know, it only happens if you're number one, where you actually run through the finish line and there's a ribbon that you pass through. That didn't happen. I was under the I was under the false impression. But other than that, it actually, it was really interesting. It played out almost exactly as I had imagined it. And I almost thought, well, heck, you know, I've just visualized the whole thing. I can skip the race tomorrow.
It's already done. Yeah.
So how does a corporate athlete visualize? What would they visualize?
So here's how you do it. And also here's why it matters and it helps you create success with ease. One study of basketball players showed that 1 hour of visualization is the same as 7 hours of physical activity. 7 hours.
Wow.
So this is why you can create success with ease with visualization, because when you visualize something, you can call it into your life or bring it about without necessarily spending as much literal time trying to make it happen.
Now, let me just get my mind wrapped around that. Let me just understand that. You say that 1 hour of visualization is the same as 7 hours of physical activity. So it's not that you're, you know, cardiovascular, et cetera. It's in terms of the improvement in performance, is that what you're saying? It would be equal to 7 hours?
Yeah. So here's an example I'll give that might sound radical, but it has happened to me so many times now in my own experience that I'm a firm believer in it. I could go to like 6 networking events. Let's say I want to be asked to speak at some conference. I could go to like 6 networking events and try to schmooze with all the right people and drive all over town and exhaust myself till my voice is hoarse. Or I could lie in bed at night, because they found that the last minute before you fall asleep at night stays in your subconscious mind for up to 4 hours while you're sleeping. So the most important time to visualize is right before you go to sleep at night. I could lie in my bed at night and visualize myself giving a talk on stage in front of hundreds of people, and then I could have someone approach me within 2 weeks and say, hey, we'd love to have you keynote this conference. And that might sound like, oh my gosh, too woo-woo pie in the sky, but I've had that happen to me on multiple occasions where I visualize something and then it just comes to me and I don't have to make any effort to get it.
I don't know, Vanessa, Columbia and Stanford, they're probably going downhill. They've really lowered their standards here. No, I'm jesting, because I do believe in this, and I've had some, you know, some of my own experiences attest to that.
Perhaps a more concrete example. So I have one client at a major consulting firm who had not a fear of public speaking, but she had extreme anxiety. So every time she had to go speak in front of the clients, which was all the time, she would get, you know, nervous and sweaty and kind of shaky before she had to get up in front of the board meeting. And so we had her visualize a confident presentation and visualize, you know, imagine in her mind's eye everyone after her big presentation talking about how incredible it was, coming up to her afterwards, patting her on the back, you know, and you want to get really clear on all the details in your mind's eye. And there's actually a few steps to successful visioning, which we teach in our course, that I don't have time to go into right now, but you could use it for a very simple situation like that, where then the next time she went in and she felt so much more confident, and she said that she, you know, a lot of her symptoms of the anxiety and the nervousness had completely gone away, or at least decreased significantly.
There is a lot to it. People think that it's just, you know, having an image in mind, but it's really almost like playing the whole movie and, again, engaging all of the senses. It's as if you were actually doing it, you know, versus just thinking about doing it. So you're right, there's a lot to it. Now, you talk about practice self-compassion. What does that mean? As another way to, you know, lean in without burning out.
Yeah, so this one was the biggest surprise for me. I was someone who my entire life beat myself up in my head, right? Like, oh, try harder, work harder, do more. And I always assumed that part of that critical voice was necessary to motivate me and that there was some benefit to it. Mm. What I've learned through the research and the science is that the opposite is true. They did this fascinating study with dieters where they brought a bunch of dieters into the room and they had them eat a donut in the name of science and then drink a very tall glass of water because they wanted them to feel uncomfortable because they wanted to trigger feelings of guilt. Mm. Okay, it was kind of a cruel study. And then they walked these people down the room, down the hallway, and as they walked them down the hallway in two different groups, with one group, as they walked them down the hallway, they gave them a message of self-compassion, saying, oh, it's okay, they ate the donut, you know, everyone indulges now and again, don't beat yourself up. The second group, they gave no message. Those two groups were then put in a room with 3 bowls of candy, and they said, please sample the candy, sample enough from each bowl so that you can rate the candy and tell us which ones you like. But what they found was the people who were given the message of self-compassion ate the equivalent of, I think it was about 4 Hershey's Kisses. The other people ate the equivalent of 16 Hershey Kisses.
Mm.
So what they found, and there's a lot of other studies that show similar results, is that self-compassion actually boosts willpower. So the kinder you are to yourself, the more gentle you are to yourself, the greater your willpower.
That's interesting. Wow. Okay. So practicing self-compassion. You've got two more here. And actually, we kind of touched on the meditation. I just find that, you know, like I said, you know, very difficult. But you're an advocate of a self-guided meditation. Does it eventually lead you to being able to, you know, meditate on your own?
It's a great question. I think it varies by individual. For me, what worked for me in the beginning, I would listen to guided meditations. I was actually really into Adya Shanti. He has one on mm-hmm. Oprah's website. And I, of course, being the overachiever that I am, went from that to let me go on a 5-day and then a 10-day silent meditation retreat. So I went straight to the marathon of meditation, thinking, let me just dive deep and master this. And that actually worked really well for me because when I coming off the retreat, I was very motivated to start a daily practice. I don't know if I ever could have sat for 20 minutes in silence having not gone on a retreat like that, you know, personally.
Would you recommend that to somebody? I had considered that over the years, whether it be a day or a 2-day. I think you had mentioned what you did, a 10-day silent retreat. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Wow. I don't know. Baby steps, right? So, and yes. You did mention that you've got this, people can actually try that out. And I just want to remind, and by the way, you know, we're not selling anything here. Vanessa actually brought this to my attention. I thought, you know, well, why not? You know, you've generously offered for people to check that out, right? Is there a website that people go to for that?
Yes.
That self-guided meditation?
We have a free 30-day meditation challenge. It starts January 6th, totally free, and you get a 5-minute meditation emailed every morning for 30 days. If you go to mindfulnessbasedachievement.com, there will be a sign up for the 30-day challenge right there on the homepage.
Okay,
Mindfulness-based achievement,
and I'll make sure we've got that on our websites, folks. If you're not able to, you know, record that right now, but I'll tell you right now, I'm gonna sign up, Vanessa.
Okay.
You know, I'm gonna check
I'm gonna
that
check
out
in with now, you in February to hear how it went.
okay. You know, because again, I think you know, what do you tell the person that says, "Hey, I got to get the kids, you know, up, ready for school, you know, fed, cleaned. You know, you got your marriage you got to take care of. You got a big job. You've got people, you know, demands, and you still want to be able to take care of yourself. I don't have time for myself." That still goes on. What do you tell a person like that? You know, where do you even begin?
It's so funny you mentioned that because I was at an event and I had a woman come up to me who has 2 children at home. She's pregnant with her 3rd. And she said, the only thing that keeps me sane is every morning I listen to your meditation. And she has 2 toddlers. And she said, but I can't get any time for myself, but I can always find 5 minutes. I can leave them alone in the playroom for 5 minutes. And I think that's why this has been so successful, is because it's just 5 minutes. We also have other people who say, you know, I listen to your meditations on the bus while I'm commuting to work or at the bus stop. You know, so working it in whatever way works for you currently, but just even committing to that 5 minutes a day, just for 30 days, can create a massive shift.
Now, some people, religious people, I think also in the Christian faith of, you know, that which I'm a part of, would say, well, you know, meditation, that's kind of contrary to, you know, the Christian belief. You know, why not just, you know, become centered through prayer and that kind of thing? So some people might resist it because they say, well, this meditation, this is, you know, new agey stuff. How would you respond to somebody with that kind of a mindset?
You know, I think you could meditate with a prayer. I think a prayer could be similar to a mantra. Mm-hmm. So you might have a very simple prayer that's just one sentence. And that's the same thing that people essentially call a mantra when you meditate. So you could actually sit and say a prayer, the same sentence again and again for 5 minutes and do a prayerful meditation.
So it's not incongruent.
No, I don't think it's incongruent at all.
Yeah. And the reason why I mentioned is one time I had a priest friend, an older guy that he was just always so peaceful and serene, and he would deliver his homilies in just a cadence that, you know, he wasn't one of those great booming orators, but just a steady, peaceful cadence that really got everybody's attention. And I remember talking to him And he was a huge fan of, you know, Eastern methods. He studied all different Eastern religions. So here's a Catholic priest that was deep into meditation and used a combination of Eastern methods along with what you just mentioned where, you know, let's say pick a prayer or a phrase that you're comfortable with. So, you know, I think that that's important for people to know. So, you know, you don't want to think of it as it violating, you know, a particular belief system.
Right. Yeah, no, I don't think it does.
Okay. So listen, hey, I think that I hear your daughter in the background.
You know, that was actually my neighbor's daughter.
I'm kidding. Was there really somebody in the background? But listen, I thank you so much. You really, I think that, you know, you set a good example for an awful lot of people. I know you do a lot of corporate work, but certainly the people listening to the show have jobs and others may be, you know, stay at home moms or dads. But I think there's a lot of excellent, guidance that you've provided us, and I thank you very much for that. Vanessa, thank you so much for joining the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you all for listening to us, and we'll see you again next week. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to The Business of Living. Please join Scott Ventrella for another edition of the show next Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll see you here next Saturday.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.